Call for the weeping mothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is History and Current Events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." And we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom." And with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. That broadcasts out of the Black Belt, and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon. And you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook, and at Facebook search engine, just type in Time for Awakening radio program. There you'll always hear interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for Awakening and interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us, activist and executive director of the organization Out for Justice. Ms. Nicole Hansen is scheduled to join us this evening to talk about the published reports regarding black women are the most rapidly growing prison population in the U.S. We'll talk about this with our guests, and she's scheduled to join us around this time, around in the 7 o'clock hour. And we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back. The time for an awakening, and before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. The snow didn't come. That's a good thing. The chill wasn't that bad. Matter of fact, it's unusual, so that's a great thing, and I'm looking forward to Sister Hansen and sharing with us what Out for Justice does and being able to inform us about the rising incarceration rate of women, African women, in the Americas.
Yeah, this is ought to be a real interesting conversation. I saw a video clip of Sister Hansen and another sister, Carolyn York, online talking about this subject, and I wanted to get her on to kind of go a little further in detail on this particular subject. Our guest tonight, activist and executive director of the organization Out for Justice, Sister Nicole Hansen, is with us in conversation. Sister Hansen, how are you?
How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with me and Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Sister Hansen? Great.
Sister Hansen, before we talk about this important subject of, according to published reports, black women being the most rapidly growing prison population in the U.S., talk about yourself a little bit. The organization Out for Justice, how did you start it? When did you start it? And talk about the mission of the organization.
So Out for Justice is a nonprofit. And let me know if I'm giving you any feedback on my cell phone.
I'm getting just a little bit. I'm getting a little bit.
Okay.
Let's see how it goes.
Out for Justice is a small grassroots organization based in Baltimore, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
That is comprised of individuals who are directly impacted by the criminal justice system and the family members of those individuals impacted by the criminal justice system. And the goal of, and the organization started back in 2009. I am not the one who started the organization. However, the organization has always been led by a black woman.
Okay.
And this black woman found it very difficult to navigate life after incarceration. And she was like a legal geek behind the walls, and was told time and time again that she should, once she get out of prison or jail, that she should just do the right thing, tell the truth on her application for employment, and that she will be able to start a new life. And she realized it wasn't that easy. And she had this keen understanding that it was the laws and the policies that directly impacted her successful reentry. And so she started Out for Justice with the mission that individuals coming home from prison or jail and those individuals who are currently incarcerated, that we focus on the legislative process, right? And this is not that I'm just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill type of infomercial, but the real deal steps of how policy works, how to influence law, how to educate yourself about who your elected officials are in your local jurisdictions and how to make sure that your voice is heard, how to write your own legislation, how to read legislation, you know, how to be present when your bills are up for committee and every step of that. And we do that through these very informative legislative workshops, where we go really deep into Maryland's legislative process. And then we mobilize ourselves, family members and friends and individuals who are interested in reforming criminal justice policies here in Maryland. We mobilize them to descend on the halls of Annapolis or in our local city halls to advocate for the laws and policies that impact us, because we understand that in order to really change the criminal justice system here in Maryland, that it has to be led by those who have those direct experiences by, you know, with the criminal justice system. We also give back to communities that we took from, because we understand that when we were involved in the life of crime, we took from somebody. We did something wrong. We may not have done heinous things, and some of us has, but we understand that a part of our reentry has to be about going back in some of those communities that we did dirt in and giving back and supporting those young people and families and mothers in those communities. We have done the first ever in Baltimore all-night community resource fair, where Baltimore has been a very violent place. And if you've been watching the news, most people know that Baltimore has been very violent. But what we also had to identify is that what is causing individuals to be violent, right? The fact that it doesn't just start with you being violent. It starts with you being stressed. You're stressed because you can't get your record expunged. You're stressed because you can't find a job. You're stressed because you can't feed your family. And then that stress then turns into being mad. And you're still mad because you're not able to do the things that you know you need to do for your family, your community, your friends, and you just can't support yourself. And so that madness then turns to anger, and that anger breeds the violence. And so what we were able to do last year was we identified what are the things that causes people to be stressed, and we brought those stress relievers to community all night. And so our state's attorney here is Merlin Mosby, and she identified the hours in which violence was happening the most. And what Out for Justice was a part of was this call to action for ceasefire in Baltimore. It was this local group called the Baltimore Ceasefire, who called on Out for Justice to participate in 72 hours of no violence. But instead of us just standing on street corners waving signs, encouraging people to not to be violent, we figured out what people needed, which was we made sure that we had lawyers on hand to offer expungement and child support. We had Black mental health professionals sitting on what we created was a nice little living room outside where Black mental health professionals could sit down and talk with people about some of the things that was troubling them, because many of our people don't want to walk inside of a clinic and say they have a mental health problem because they don't want to be deemed crazy. So we gave them the opportunity to sit and talk with some professionals. We gave unlimited food, and I mean good food, was catered by a local activist here in Baltimore called Shorty Bootleg Barbecue. Healthy fruits and vegetables, We play music. We educate the community about knowing their rights. We had the ACLU there. We had individuals from a local group called Paul's Place who was giving out money orders for folks to go get their IDs and social security cards. We had self-defense training for women that were, you know, walking in some of these dangerous communities, learning how to protect themselves. And so what we were able to do was bring those much-needed resources to people during vulnerable times of the day. Because what we understood is you are thinking about your whole life at night. At night is when the world comes crashing down on you and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do the next day. And what we know is that if people could act on those things in the night, they would. And so we gave people an opportunity to really act on some of the things that they wanted to take care of during the day but just couldn't during the night. And so that's like the community part of what we do. And then doing the so we're on the same schedule as the lawmakers here in Maryland. When they're in Annapolis passing laws and policies, so are we. When they're back in the district telling the constituents what they've done, and we're back in the district telling the constituents what they have not done. And so that's what we do. You know, we educate, engage, and empower the reentry community around what laws and policies impact them and how they can use their voice to make sure that law is serving in their best interest.
Sister Hanson, you know, I wanted to kind of ask you something in reference to the black women being incarcerated at those higher rates. But before we do that, Richard, do you want to comment on some of the things that Sister Hanson was just talking about the organization and what they're
doing? Well, let me say I appreciate the, and correct me if I'm wrong, the direct actions that Alpha Justice is doing, because that's what it sounds like as far as doing the education and actually engaging people, engaging us where we are. So my question based off of your explaining that is for you personally, and this is one, especially from that, if I understood it, Baltimore City's fire action and the things that you're, what have you personally learned from this direct action as it relates to Baltimore community? I mean, and I understand the social and the political, but you personally, as your engagement as an organizer and information conduit, what have you personally learned from that experience, this experience?
I have personally learned how to do more with less. I have personally learned how important me staying on the right track, me continuing to not succumb to bad behaviors and thinking about making a quick dollar. I have learned that I am essentially an example for other people, in that, you know, I have to continue to be encouraged, be engaged, and be supportive, because folks are looking at me for advice and support, and they're looking at me as an example. And so it's a heavy lift. I'm all grateful for it. I have also learned how to manage my time. You know, there was one time, it was one point in my life where time wasn't a priority for me, right? And I could go and come as I please, but doing this work, you really have to manage your time very effectively and be able to be at three places at one time sometime, and be accessible to folks. And so what's most important to me, though, is that I am accessible to my community and that folks can reach me when they need me, and that I'm there to support them.
great.
And if I can, Ellie, follow up, you know,
go ahead.
Because I'm wondering, especially, I mean, what y'all are doing around the educational, the legal, I mean, not the legal, but the political education process. It's like so critically important that we understand just as quote unquote citizens, and that's questionable, but as citizens, how this mechanism works, you know, truly, and how do we take control of that, right? Engaging in, which I take it is two levels, that you're the experience that Alpha Justice has learned as an operation organization and in dealing with the community. That is the information stuff. I wanted to get your feedback on how do you, you know, as you became more informed about how the political mechanism works to really get control over it, what was the most compelling thing that you found out in that experience? That the community has to grapple with. And the other thing, how does the interaction of the representatives and y'all actually taking this information to the community, what is the reaction from those representatives that supposed to be the ones that are doing that job, it seems to me?
Give me that first question again. I got but your how, second question.
How has that information actually impacted you as far as what is it, the piece that you found out in learning the legal process, I mean, learning the political process, how to write a law, how to, you know, lobby the law, how to be able to, you know, monitor those who have to vote on that law. What was the thing that stuck out to you?
The biggest thing that stuck out to me about that, us learning that process, is that we aren't expected to know that, right? Like, that is something that the white men and white women in suits are only supposed to know. They're the ones that is supposed to be in the legislature, you know, on a regular basis, and that, we're not looked at, or wasn't looked at as the experts on criminal justice, and that they were just, you know, shocked. And sometimes many people are, you can tell it in their voice. They don't say it outright, but it's quite shocking to them how deeply involved we are in the legislative process. And so what also sticks out to us too is how, when those legislators go to Annapolis or wherever the state capital is, when they pass some laws, they are in their comfort zone, right? They are very comfortable in this space. It's not like being back in the district. And they don't like it when you are in their comfort zone. And so what I find funny is when we're able to bring hundreds of people down to Annapolis, how quickly they remember who Out for Justice is, how quickly they remember our issues, when we bring these people and we bring these people in a space that they are most comfortable with, and they're not, they don't expect that people who look like us can speak so well and can articulate our thoughts in a way that's not like aggressive or yelling. They don't expect us to be able to know the law better than they know the law. So yeah, that's the thing that stands out. In terms of their reactions vary, right? So we have some Black elected officials who love the work that we do, who supports the work that we do, and who is always eager for session to start because they know they have a support base of constituents that they can rely on and depend on. Mm-hmm. And then others, it's bothersome to them, right? Because, like I said, they don't have these high expectations of individuals directly impacted by the criminal justice system. And so when we spit off a piece of legislation that they essentially probably like watered down or something, they get offended. You know, they get offended that we go on Facebook and we call them out and we encourage their constituents to call them and set them straight or encourage them to vote in our favor. And so it's two-sided. It's that side of legislators who love, support, and are eager for us to come to Annapolis or are eager for the legislative session to start so that we can offer the type of support that they need in order to push these types of laws. And then the others are looking at us like, why do they have to be here? Who do they think they are, kind of thing.
Wow. Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad that the level of activism is going on, and it seems to be going on all over the country in areas where we populate, Richard.
Yes. It needs to expand, and that's the interesting thing, you know, because of what Sister, you know, Sister Hansen said, is because the more we are engaged in it, the more the rules change to our favor process.
We're in conversation with activist and executive director of Out for Justice, Nicole Hansen. And we're talking about the subject or the published report of Black women are the most rapidly growing prison population in the U.S. Sister Hansen, let's go into that subject. We see in it, and I'm getting just a little bit of feedback. It might be your cell phone, but let's try to fight through it. We see that it seems like these attacks on the Black family seems to go in cycles when you're looking at the system. Black men, young boys. Now it's the girls that are the largest growing prison population. Talk about how this starts. A lot of our people might not realize that this is cultivated, almost like somebody would plant a seed and water it and nurture it until they see it producing fruit or vegetables. Talk about how this is cultivated. I want to read, and before you do this, let me read just a paragraph or two from this report from the Louisiana Weekly, and it's dated July 20th, 2017, about the nation's Black women are jailed at an unfair rate, studies say. Yeah. It says Black women are more prone to be jailed than white women, and the tendency starts in schools. Racial disparities in disciplines exist throughout the nation's education system. Black girls between 2011 and 2013 accounted for 45% of all girls suspended from K to 12 in public schools nationally, and they represent 42% of girls expelled. They were also suspended and expelled at higher rates than Black boys. Disciplining of Black girls appears to be influenced by the school's administrators' stereotypes and racial biases. Researchers say Black girls are likely to be seen as disruptive, loud, compared to other students. They are more often punished for dress code violations, talking back to teachers, and defiance with other girls. What's worse, Black girls with disabilities are more prone to be suspended from school than other Black girls. Talk about this, how this is developing a whole generation, seems like, of young girls developing into young women in prison.
It is.
Go ahead.
It is.
Go ahead.
Because it's this method of, from what we've seen back during slavery, is criminalizing behavior. Right, that just because I am a Black girl and I act like a Black girl, that's a bad thing. And that the way I wear my hair or the way I speak or the way I communicate with other people is somewhat a bad thing. And that we have educators in our schools who are not of our culture and have no clue of how we communicate, the ways in which we communicate, what is frustrating to us, what is not frustrating, what is funny to us, what is not funny to us. And so no one is taking, well, I won't say no one, but there isn't a deliberate attempt to teach Black girls in the way that Black girls should be taught and to deal with Black girls the way that we deserve to be treated. We know that 80% of women in U.S. prisons suffered severe violence as children, right? And 75% of them were abused by an inmate partner during adulthood. And so there's like an estimated like 90% of women, in particular in some New York prisons, that have experienced sexual or physical violence in their lifetime. Mm-hmm. And that's where that stuff starts. It starts early on with treating me as I'm some sort of a criminal coming out of the womb. You have a lot of young girls living with HIV and hepatitis C and, you know, different sexual diseases. It's just not a good place for Black girls right now in this country. And like you said a little earlier, the rate of incarceration for women and girls have increased 200% because nobody's paying attention. It's just like you're letting this volcano erupt and it's building and you see it. It's making noise. It's scratching the surface. But we want to keep turning our heads as if it's not happening. And so the longer we ignore Black girls and the ways that we are shuffling them into the system, the ways that we are perpetuating the school to prison pipeline, we get this enormous amount of women who are now sitting in our prisons and jails, and we're looking like, how did this happen? And what, you know, but nobody's paying attention.
Go ahead, Richard. Go ahead.
As you view the around the criminal justice in Baltimore, how has the legal apparatus or the Baltimore legislation addressed that? If it's also a growing phenomenon in Baltimore or in Baltimore in the state of Maryland.
I mean, in my opinion, they're not addressing it, mm-hmm. right? Like, if we know that women are incarcerated for crimes related to substance abuse, let's figure out a way to be real deliberate in providing substance abuse for women and girls in a way that they can bring their children throughout this treatment, right? If we know that women are incarcerated for crimes related to trauma and lack of economic opportunity, then what are we doing to make sure that our women, girls are coming out of school if they're not going to go to college, but they're coming out of school with some trade skills to be able to provide for their family? Firstly, like, we are not paying attention to what women and young girls need in order to, be removed from this criminal justice system. Virtually nowhere in this gross misuse of incarceration is more evident that when considering the challenges women in prison face before they entered the system in the first place. So specifically in Baltimore, we have a situation here where our mayor has invested how many millions? I think it was a little under $5 million into a program called ROCA that comes out of, I can't even remember where this program comes, but this program is supposed to reduce recidivism and deal with violence in young Black boys, right? And while young Black boys are important, and I think they're important and we should always work on young Black boys, how do you invest this amount of money into a program that only targets young Black boys when the data shows that women are they're at an increase in terms of violence and going into the criminal justice system? So for me, it's like, you know, you can't care. I mean, we have a Black woman as a mayor, and personally, I like her, but the politics around. But the politics around investing millions of dollars into a program that does not address Black girls is a problem for me. It's a problem. Because many of our girls are at the center of this violence. when these little boys are committing crimes, it is likely that it could have been because of a girl. It's likely that his mother knows about it. It's likely mm-hmm. that his girlfriend knows about it. It's likely that they're setting up shop in the little girl's house. Black girls are at the center of the violence that's happening in Baltimore. And it's almost like folks don't get it. They're not paying attention. And to have a mayor that invested millions of dollars into a program. This was an outside program. If anybody knows about Baltimore, they know that there are advocates on the ground that do this work. And we do this work out of our own pockets many times. And so we have a situation where the mayor has convened grassroots groups for the last, 6 months or so. She's the first mayor who's ever done it. But she has decided to bring in grassroots organizations and meet with us on a monthly basis about what our needs are, you know, where our challenges are, and what we can do to support the work in Baltimore. And we're constantly telling her, we need funding, we need this, we need help on how to write a grant, we need all these things. But we have the capabilities to get this work done. And I will say, if it's not for us being out here in these streets, Baltimore would be a much dangerous place than it already is. And it was almost like a smack in the face for her to invest millions of dollars into an outside group when you got over 20 groups sitting in your face once a month telling you the work that we're doing. You know the work that we're doing, and yet you go and invest millions of dollars into an outside group that only focuses on boys. No focus on girls.
Sister Hanson, the outside group, is that when you say outside, are you saying like outside of the Baltimore or outside?
It's a group called ROCA. I think it's led by a white woman.
I kind of figured that.
That's what I was thinking also.
Yeah.
And here, you know, but remember, I have to say this. Remember, the work of the Panthers was outside of the political process. And those young women and men were able to provide support to a community that the political system didn't. And the money always went to like the food program eventually becomes a political. And I'm saying that to you and to Alpha Justice because we have to be encouraging with each other, because it is a sacrifice. It is demoralizing. It is utilizing us, because they take that information and give it to a group like ROCA that is not going to be really next to the ground with the people and creating solidarity and some kind of emotional commitment for the responsibility that you're taking. So I just need to emphasize that to you.
Right.
Ms. Hanson,
so what we're pushing for now is Alpha Justice in a group called Maryland Justice Project, which is led by formerly incarcerated women. We have decided to take our issue to Annapolis, and we are demanding that the state allocates appropriate funding to a women's pre-release center. So currently here in the state of Maryland, there are over 9 separate brick-and-mortar pre-release centers for men. And that means that's a status. So when you are within 2 years of your release, your security level is reduced to minimum security, and you're no longer the threat that you were when you came in. And now it is your opportunity to start navigating life in preparation for your reentry to society. And so for men, they get to get access to housing. For men, they get to come leave outside the institution. And many of the places where the men are, they are right in the middle of community. So they get to hear the birds chirp. They get to see how people interact. They get to ride the transit system. They get to figure out if they want to go to college or they want to enter into a workforce development program. they get to reengage back with their children and their loved ones, they get a host of services that helps them prepare for their return. While women who are eligible for pre-release, who have been classified to minimum security levels, they are housed in a maximum security institution, which is a safety issue all in itself. You don't house minimum and maximum in the same institution. You don't house women who can go in and out of a facility with women who may never see the light of day. And these are women who are subjected to jobs like McDonald's or Ruby Tuesdays, because they have to get jobs in and around the maximum security prison because they don't want to go outside of the county and have to figure out a way back and risk getting in trouble for not getting back on time because they haven't figured out how to navigate the transit system. These are women who have to be bused to their job in a correctional van, shackled. They have to pull up in front of their employers in shackles. The prison van will unlock the door, and this is what their coworkers see of them. This is the first impression that everybody gets of them, is this woman getting off the bus in shackles. They don't have access to their families, and these women still have to pay the jail money to stay, even though the state is getting about $34,000 an inmate. Women still have to pay to live in the prison. And so what we are saying to the Maryland state legislators is this can be no more. You can no longer operate over 9 centers for men where they are prepared to come back home and you have nothing for women. And then we are expected to snap back and be mothers again. We're expected to make sure that our mental health is stable, that our physical health is stable, that we are connecting with our children, that we are getting access to jobs and housing and education, but yet you release us directly from a maximum security prison with no support structure?
Ms. Hanson, I think that what you're doing, well, not I think, I know what you're doing is the approach that we're going to have to take. And then when I say we're, I'm talking about our people in all of these major cities and smaller cities, is to go directly to the community with services and talking that's going to let our people know exactly what we're dealing with and to start the healing right in the community. I know that there's funds needed to do this. And that's where the part about your political education and letting the people know what their black representatives are supposed to be doing and are not doing in providing these resources for this to be done. It's only going to happen if we do it ourselves. I think that what you're doing by going straight to the community is what's needed. Talking to families, talking to women, talking to these young girls. Now, my question to you, is there men involved in Out for Justice with you?
It is. Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason
there's a lot of men involved in Out for Justice.
Now, the reason I'm saying this, because I don't want a lot of our people to look at this situation that we're facing and try to pit one against the other. And I'm not saying that you're doing that at all. But I'm saying that this is a system that has done this to black families. And the reason for, and this is coming from a man, I think the reason why a lot of that anger and trauma happens in these families, take the system out of it for the time. Just put it to the side. We know what the system does to black people as a whole. But I'm talking about the family trauma deals with a lot of these men that have abandoned these women and abandoned these families. And left these women to a point where they're frustrated to try to deal with this by themselves. A lot of this blame, if you're going to put blame, has to be shouldered by these men. They have to come back into these communities, get back involved with their families, and help these women. Because we can see now that the system now is attacking these women who were heretofore the backbone when a lot of these men were getting in trouble and sitting behind bars. The women were trying to hold things down. But now we see where the system is attacking these women. So we have to come up with the solution.
What I would say is, you're right. You're right that if we were to put any blame, you know, we would first start with this system because there's just, you know, these structures in place that are designed to not only attack black women, but attack black men. Mm-hmm. And as a result, black men have been traumatized and abused, and so hurt people hurt people. What I can say as it relates to Out for Justice and the men that support us and that the men that are a part of this organization, they hold us down in every kind of way.
Okay.
And are always supportive of the women here at the organization. They're consistently going through training themselves and learning how to be better men. Many of our men come from taking up programs over at Center for Urban Families led by Joe Jones, you know, the Black Male Initiative, and all those programs that teach them how to be better fathers and be better men. And so what I can say is, in terms of the reentry community here in Baltimore and the members at Out for Justice, those men, they are always, always in the process of bettering themselves and learning how to be better fathers and better men in their communities. And they're doing the hard work of rebuilding their families and rebuilding communities. They're doing it.
Okay, great, great. A couple of things I wanted to throw out there in reference to this issue, because Sister Hanson, when the women come out of prison, and men, you can also kind of use this both ways. Are they able to have their record expunged where these things are not held against them? Are they able to get involved in their communities as far as voting for representation? How is that working?
So what we've been able to do over the last at least decade or so is Out for Justice co-led the Coalition to Restore Voting Rights for over 40,000 individuals with criminal records here in Maryland. So currently here in Maryland, as of 2015, individuals, no matter how many felonies you have, and even if you're on probation and parole, you can vote here in Maryland. And then in terms of expungement, we have been a part of a few expungement bills led by Job Opportunity Task Force, which is a very close partner of Out for Justice. Now here in Maryland, you can get certain nonviolent convictions expunged. Those non-convictions are eligible for expungement. And some convictions that led in a guilty finding are eligible for shielding. Some crimes of like domestic peace orders are also eligible for shielding. So we're moving in the right direction in terms of expungement, not where we want to be. We are supporting a bill called Redeem Act of 2019 here in Maryland, where we want to automatically expunge, because currently in the state of Maryland, you have to apply to expunge. And we want all non-convictions eligible for expungement, immediate expungement, automatic expungement. People should not have to go to court. They shouldn't have to pay $30 for a situation where they were not found guilty or they were acquitted. We want those automatically expunged. And we also want nonviolent misdemeanors expunged after you have completed your probation or your 3 years on parole or whatever. And then we want nonviolent felonies also expunged after 5 years. So that's the legislation that we're pushing for this session that's led by Delegate Nick Mosby, the husband of our state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, here in Baltimore. And then we're going after a very important issue called the unit rule here in Maryland. And that's really defined in street terms as overcharging. So when an individual is confronted with law enforcement and they have you know, essentially been accused of one crime, many times the police will charge them with 5 or 6 different charges, assuming that they would cop out to one charge. And when they do cop out to avoid jail time, the other charges on their records are dismissed. But because they copped out to the one charge within that unit, none of those charges are eligible for expungement. And so what we're fighting for this year also is to repeal the unit rule, which is a prosecutorial tool that's used by prosecutors to keep certain offenses on people's record. Because what we have here in Maryland is different from other states. We have a thing called the Maryland case search, which is the worst way to look up someone's criminal history. But everything is there for the public to see on Maryland Case Search, even things that were dismissed. And so people are not able to find jobs or get access to housing because many private landlords will use the Maryland Case Search as a way to figure out if they have this criminal in their homes, even if the person can afford the housing, even if they make a decent amount of money on their job. The mere fact of having a criminal record could stop you from providing housing for you and your families. And so we want to make sure that as many offenses are eligible for expungement we can get, because then that way these offenses will come off of this database that anyone can just access.
Okay. So, Dan, how has the women who have been involved in the prison system and with the activism that y'all are doing actually come in and been supportive? I'm asking, how has the role of your volunteerism grown by women who've actually been involved in the prison system?
When I think back, we have a membership of over 300 people in our database. And most of our members are people coming home from prison or jail. I think our numbers are up on the walls in the jails and the prisons because they know that we will help. And even though Out for Justice is not essentially a direct service organization, we are merely a policy org, but indirectly we become a direct service org just because of the population we serve. And so, women are coming home and they're ready to be involved. They're ready to change the conditions themselves. And they're increasingly stepping up in terms of phone banking and letter writing and research and just being good people themselves and leading by example. And so all of the women in Out for Justice are women who have done some time behind the walls and have come back and wanted to change the laws and policies that impact their reentry. Mm-hmm. I hope I answered it.
Oh yeah. And if I can I follow up, Elliot?
Go ahead.
Because I was, and I'm glad to hear that. And the thing now that comes to my mind is to ask, okay, y'all are doing this great work, good work, and recognize that you've informed us that the government, even by someone you respect, isn't really making the right kind of choices. How what do you say to us who are listening in the Time for Awakening audience? What is it that we can do for Alpha Justice in relationship to support or not?
Just be available to listen, to offer some mentorship. I know, they always talk about people, they want individuals who are formerly incarcerated to be mentors, but many of us need mentors too. We need mentors in financial literacy and learning how to build our own businesses and these different focus areas that we're interested in. We also need mentors. funding, sending small donations our way. That stuff goes a long way. I know transportation is one of our biggest line items in the organization because we understand how difficult it is to get to point A to point B. And so we make sure that we cover the cost if members want to get to and from meetings, or they want to go to host a different event at a school, or they want to do a tabling event, that we cover the transportation costs and pay for gas. Educating themselves about the laws and policies that impact Maryland and being on hand to do mass emails and mass letter writings and mass phone banking and being available to have some bodies on the ground when we're in Annapolis during this time. You know, having bodies goes a very long way. You know, sometimes all it takes is to turn out 15, 25 people on one issue for lawmakers to listen and change their minds. We need researchers, right? We need people continuously researching these issues and pulling up the data. Any way you can think in terms of a nonprofit organization, because you know we're still dealing in the belly of the nonprofit industrial complex, right? Mm-hmm. We had situations where people are waving checks in our faces knowing that we need the funding, but have all these restrictions on how we use the funding. I guess those are some of the small things. You know, sending $5 a month goes a long way. Being available to, you know, if you know any lawyers that want to learn how to do expungement here in Maryland, we need that. We need more Black attorneys expunging the records. So when these people sit down with them, they can see that, you know, it's Black faces in the legal world that's willing to help them remove their records.
Mm. Thank you for that.
Sister Hanson, the when you sit down and talk with a lot of the women that come to the sessions that you have, that Out for Justice has for a lot of the women, formerly incarcerated women, do they talk about some of, now it's bad enough some of the trauma in our communities by some few out of control individuals in a lot of these neighborhoods that wreak havoc on the whole neighborhood. But according to a published report, it says Black women accounted for 22.6% of females killed by police, although they only represent 13% of the nation's women. When we see these incidents, the Sandra Bland's, the young woman a couple of weeks ago that went viral in McDonald's that got snatched across the counter by a white individual, how does this resonate with some of the young guys? I know women can talk about these issues in a more mature fashion, but when you have young children, preteens, young girls seeing this type of stuff, how are they communicating? What are they saying in some of these sessions about what they're seeing in the public?
They're frustrated. They're frustrated that they're being treated this way. They are, they want to know what to do. Right, okay. They want to know how to defend themselves against law enforcement that abuse them. And we get them those tools. You know, we bring in legal professionals who can educate them on, like, how to interact with law enforcement and what to do when you're confronted with law enforcement. You know, how to open up your phone really fast and turn that video on. But it's demoralizing, right? You know, for a woman to feel like she's helpless out there in community, she can't always be with her brother, or her father can't always be there to protect her. And so it's alarming for them, but it motivates them to want to do more, to want to learn more, and to want to help, you know? And so it's not a thing that gets us down here in Baltimore. It's a thing that awakens us and makes us want to buck back at the system more and more.
If I can, and make it piggybacking that on that on another topic, just had this Women's March yesterday, right? How have you and the senior organizers for Out for Justice, did y'all have an expectation that this issue around women and criminalization of women would be a part of that? Or do you think it was a part of that or anything in that vein as far as how did this resonate with y'all?
So I was able to speak at the Baltimore's March and talk about issues impacting incarcerated women. I know our family, our partners out there in Prince George's County, they attended the D.C. March where the group, the Coalition for Women and Girls, Incarcerated Women and Girls, were there. And I think more and more, this country and this state and other states are starting to recognize the need to invest and support our women, because when you invest in people, the return is indefinite. And so I think that is resonating. I think Black women, we're going to make sure that people hear what we have to say. And we don't really care how long it takes, but we're going to continue to demand that this state and that this country pay attention to how we are incarcerating our young Black girls and what we can do to prevent this before it gets, which is already out of hand, but how can we push to prevent more girls from interacting with the criminal justice system? I mean, I don't know how much it resonated in D.C. I do know that I made an impact in Baltimore.
Mm. How was the turnout for the Baltimore rally?
Oh, I think we had over 400 or 500 people there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is there a coalition building, I guess around Baltimore and then, any neighboring counties and states around this issue that y'all are engaged in around women in prison, imprisonment?
Yes, there's a coalition called the Coalition for Women Prisoners. That coalition consists of Out for Justice, Maryland Justice Project, the Maryland ACLU, Job Opportunities Task Force. And we just started this year, and the first piece of legislation out is the Women's Pre-Release Bill. Mm-hmm. There also is a group of women out of Prince George's County, Maryland, who is doing great work with some women programs and addressing the needs for women and girls coming out of the system.
Ms. Hanson, before we start winding the conversation down, I want you to kind of reflect back and talk about the Freddie Gray situation that led to the uprising in Baltimore and how it seemed from a distance that the lines of delineation were being drawn between Black representation that was silent on this issue and ones that spoke out to a certain extent. From published reports, it seems as though the district attorney, Marilyn Mosby, was trying to get justice for Freddie Gray. We've seen that the police, it was almost just as many Black police involved in that murder than white. the lines of delineation seem to be drawn right down the center in Baltimore and in our community. I'm not even talking about how that added to the trauma of young people seeing this, being that Freddie Gray was a young person, and they seeing this and then seeing their community go into uprising behind it. But talk about this from an adult standpoint, and you've seen how this kind of people didn't stand up when they really should have when they seen this being done.
Yeah, well, many of us, the advocates on the ground, we felt it brewing for a while. And I remember being out there on the ground before the uprise happened and really trying to prevent and avoid and support the young people where they needed to be supported. But we felt this for a long time coming. The young people were frustrated and nobody was speaking up for them, and they needed to figure out a way to articulate their concerns, and that was the way they did it. Was it necessarily the right way? Maybe not. But that was that. That's what they decided, and I did all that I could to support those young people out there on the ground to avoid, you know, incarceration or what have you. It's when you think about the people who should have stood up that didn't.
Okay.
I don't know. You're taking me back because you know, the people who appeared to be stuck. And so you saw.
Say that again, Ms. Hanson.
That were per se in front of the camera, but they were not necessarily the people who stepped up, right? Like, what we consider stepping up is avoiding a mom and pop store from being vandalized. And what they considered stepping up was standing in front of the cameras singing Kumbaya and fake rallying, right?
Okay.
And what we consider not stepping up is those elected officials who have resided over that district for years and not making sure that investment happened in those neighborhoods.
Okay.
You know, what we consider not stepping up was not having a market within a mile of your neighborhood where you can go and get healthy fruits and vegetables. That's what we consider not stepping up. And so these people had not been stepping up for years, you know. Okay. And so when Freddie Gray happened, it was almost like, so what did y'all expect? Did y'all really expect these young people to be living in these types of conditions, to be treated the way they were treated by law enforcement and not do anything? And then when we found, which we already knew, just the country found out, that we had a situation with crooked cops. This is something that those young people have been enduring for years.
Okay.
You know, the world just saw that we had a GTTF, Gun Trace Task Force, of black and white officers who plant drugs and guns on people and send people away. Out for Justice has a member called, his name is Ivan Potts, and he was one of the first people to be released under the GTTF scandal, right? And so what I will say is what Freddie Gray did for the grassroots organizations in particular, what it did to Alpha Justice is it forced us to start working in silos, right? Because before Freddie Gray, we were all out here doing this work, but I may have been doing something similar than someone over West Baltimore was doing, and I didn't even know him.
Okay.
And so what Freddie Gray did was it brought the grassroots organizations together. It brought us, it forced us to look at one another and say, why aren't we working together? Why aren't we supporting one another? And I think we have grown since Freddie Gray. Have we seen any investment in Penn North? No. Have millions of dollars came through Baltimore City? Yes, as a result of Freddie Gray. Have the people on the ground felt that money? No. So,
Ms. Hanson,
you know,
I know, and you. And you're gonna. Ms. Hanson, your voice is fading. Ms. Hanson? Ms. Hanson, can you hear me? Ms. Hanson?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, yes. Repeat that because your voice faded down. It might be your phone. Repeat the last statement that you made.
I'm sorry.
Your last statement that you made.
No, I said that's where we are. Like, we're still busy at work. The same work that we were doing before Freddie Gray. I know it was a group called Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle who, right before Freddie Gray, had introduced some legislation that would remove the Police Officer Bill of Rights, because the police officers have special protection here in Baltimore and probably like most states, where they can shoot somebody and they don't have to give a statement or anything for weeks, right? And right before Freddie Gray, that year in Annapolis, they were trying to get a law passed that reformed the Police Officers' Bill of Rights that held police accountable for some of the crimes that they were committing, but the legislators didn't pass it. And then we had Freddie Gray, and here we are with these officers who killed a black man, and they did not have to answer for that. You know, they did not have to, you know, they were not held accountable, so to say, for the crimes that they commit. They didn't even have to sit down and talk to anybody for weeks after they killed Freddie Gray.
Ms. Hansen, before we let you go, I want you to give out all the information that you want to give out, how people can contact, if they want to help. We got some researchers on this program that want to offer their services and anything that you want to get. In fact, let me go to Newport News. You might let's go to Newport News. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No. Newport News. Let's put them back on hold. Ms. Hansen, give out any information where people can contact you if they want to get involved in helping, things of that nature. The floor is yours.
Sure. You can get in contact with us at www.out4justice.org. You can also call our office at 443-563-2123. Those are the two ways. We have a Facebook page, Out for Justice, OUTFORJUST. You can follow us on Facebook. That is where we post a lot of our policy initiatives, our call to actions. You can email us at getinfo@out4justice.org to be added to our Google group. And just thanks for having us. Like I said before, the ways that you can get involved is visit our website, learn about these issues here in Maryland, get in touch with your lawmakers, you know, send us funding because we need money to operate. And whatever your skill sets are that you could, you know, sometimes you don't need money. You just need to utilize the gift that God gave you. And so whatever gift God gave you, I'm sure that we can utilize it over here, Out for Justice.
Before you go, let's go to 240. 240? 240, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Sister Hansen, the door is always open to you on Time for Awakening. If anything breaks, if you want to tell us about any initiative you're doing, any collaborations that you're doing, because you mentioned about some of the groups now are starting to collaborate, which is great. The door is always open to you. You can contact me. You can come back on, and it can be aired on Time for Awakening.
It's great. It's great thing. I have to say, Elliot and to Sister Hansen, the thing I want to learn from y'all is this whole policy formation process. I think that is so critical for us to take.
Sure,
take
you got to come down to one of our membership meetings.
Now, you know, I'm going to tell you, I'm always saying that what I want to do, and then people tell me to come. Now, y'all, I got to get the moving.
Yeah, we got to get the moving. We're all about action. So we brush up every month on some part of the legislative process. We have membership meetings every last Wednesday of the month at 1400 East Federal Street. We are located in the Oliver community. And the Oliver community is in East Baltimore. It is the sister of Sandtown, Winchester. So anything that you've ever heard about Sandtown, Winchester, the Oliver community on the other side of town is equal to that. And so we have strategically and intentionally decided to do our work in the heart of Baltimore. So anytime you want to come down, you are invited to learn this process, because this is the process they anticipate that we never learn.
Yes.
So
I'm glad you're doing that work. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you for being with us, Sister Hanson.
Okay.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll transition into open forum the rest of the way. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and I want to thank our guest that was with us this evening, activist executive director of Out for Justice, Mr. Cole Hansen, was with us. He talked about black women are the most rapidly growing prison population in the U.S. and other related topics. Richard?
Yes, sir.
You know, I'm glad to have Sister Hansen with us.
Mm-hmm.
And it just shows more and more. Now, she's in Baltimore. Whenever we reach out, it's our people all over this country that are in communities where we are that are doing something. Our people ain't just sitting around twiddling their thumbs or sitting around on the sidelines just looking like they're watching a tennis match. These people are out here. Our brothers and sisters are out here trying to make an impact. But again, we see the same thing happening, Richard. Now, you notice what she said, that these grassroots organizations have been out there for a while, have had relationships. When she say relationships, she's saying that the lawmakers, and I'm talking about the black lawmakers that's in Baltimore, are aware of their existence. She talked about the mayor there, who was a black woman, and she said, personally, she's a nice person. But she said, when you see these organizations out here that's in the community and know they need funds, and you go out and get some white organization outside of the community and give them $5 million, to quote unquote do what these organizations is doing, and you know they're not going to do what those organizations are doing. They don't have the community care. They don't care anything about what black people are doing in these communities. They don't. They want the money. Now, where do you see that, Richard? Look at these other communities. These lawmakers that represent their communities, when Asians want something done in their communities, when Jewish folks want something done in their communities, when Italians, Irish, any of these other Anglos want something done in their communities, their community groups lobbies lawmakers, and they get the money for their community groups. It's no other ethnic group comes into somebody else's community and facilitates things for them. If it is, Richard, or the listening audience knows of any, maybe they can tell me. What other ethnic groups goes into these other ethnic communities' groups and facilitates things for them? Come on, Richard, you tell me. Maybe you might know.
I agree with you. You know, the only reason I'm hesitating, I'm looking at this article published in 17, December 13th of 17, where it says Greater Baltimore Committee raised $6.5 million for city anti-crime program. It shows that who's in alignment with who. The Greater Baltimore Committee raised $6.5 million to help Baltimore launch the ROCA program, an anti-crime. And ROCA is the same thing she mentioned. Am I getting it right?
Mm-hmm.
The same group that she mentioned that is dealing with this whole thing of recidivism with women launched the ROCA program, an anti-crime program successful in Massachusetts. GBC members companies, Baltimore Gas, Electric Company, John Hopkins University, T. Rowe and Price Groups, and Whitney Tower Turner Contracting Company joined Mayor Kathleen Plug at City Hall on Wednesday to announce the program funding. Plug had been trying to raise money for $16 million to bring ROCA to Baltimore. The GBC contribution will add to the more than $3 million in charitable foundation dollars. She will seek funding from the city and the state. Now, didn't she say that this mayor allocated $5 million, did I hear?
That's what she said, yeah.
To this ROCA organization that comes out of Massachusetts. And then you see these here other companies that's lining up saying that they're pulling this money together to provide this. Now these are companies within Baltimore or Baltimore consumers are the ones that are buying their services. But, and as you said, here is people who have their feet on the ground, who have a relationship with the community, who have the experience of people. Are those philanthropies and city giving them the money? They're giving them opposition, but are they giving them the money to continue to work? Which says something about who they want, or what effectiveness do they really want out of Baltimore, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., New York City, as it comes to dealing with these issues and this particular issue of the increase of women who are going to prison or even the recidivism rate. They ain't giving the people who are really can do the work, as you say. And there's a lot of groups that's there. No, they're giving somebody else. They're giving them work.
Because they want their product to keep growing. And their product is black folks, men, women, and young boys and girls. They want their product to keep growing. They paying $5 million towards this organization. Now, let me read. I'm going to share this with the listening audience. This comes from a published report, prisonpolicyinitiative.org, January 25th of last year. It says, follow the money of mass incarceration. The cost of imprisonment, including who benefits, who pays, is a major part of the national discussion around the criminal justice policy. Prisons and jails are just one piece of the criminal justice system, and the amount of media and policy attention that various players get or do not get is proportional to their influence. In this first-of-a-kind report, we find that the system of mass incarceration generates at least $1.8 billion every year, according to this report. We provide significant cost of our global unprecedented system of mass incarceration and overcriminalization. We give the relative importance of the various parts. We highlight some of the under-discussed yet costly parts of the system, and then we share all of our sources so that journalists and advocates can build upon our work. Now, let me just read a few of these things here and see how much money is generated. Follow the money. Judicial and legal. Criminal, then this is just criminal law only, $29 billion a year. Prosecution, 5.8. Defense, 4.5 billion. Policy, criminal law only, $63.2 billion. Civil asset forfeiture, 4.5 billion. Bail fees, 1.4 billion. The cost to families, 2.9 billion. Now, I ain't saying million, I'm saying billion. Mm-hmm. Commissary, 1.6 billion. Telephone calls, 1.3 billion. Public corrections agencies, that's state jails and private and probation, $80.7 billion. Public employees, $38.4 billion. Health care, $12.3 billion. Construction, $3.3 billion. Interest on payments, payment interest, $1.9 billion. Food, $2.1 billion. Private corrections, $3.9 billion. And private prison profits, $0.37 billion. The annual expenditures is $182 billion, according to this report. Mm. Almost half the money spent on running correctional system goes towards paying staff. This group is influential in lobbying that sometimes prevent reforms and whose influence is often protected even when the prison population drops. The government payroll for corrections employees is over 100 times higher than the private prison industry's profits. I mean, everybody is getting rich from this. Specialized phone companies has a monopoly on contracts and charge families up to $24.97 for 15-minute phone calls. Commissary, vendors that sell goods to incarcerated people who rely largely on money sent by loved ones, is an even larger industry that brings in $1.6 billion a year. So everybody got their hand out. So when you see this black lawmaker giving this company in Massachusetts, a white company in Massachusetts, come down to Baltimore and supposedly help with mass incarceration, that's a bunch of crap. When you got individuals, grassroots down there, and some people that came out of those systems that want to help the community can't get a dime. That's why it's necessary. Listen, I know some of our people is down on the political process, and I'm not talking about these voting for these presidents and all this other stuff. I'm talking about local elections, Richard. These local representatives in these local communities, we can start taking control of these local communities. Because it's money that flows through these local communities. And other people are getting it. She said that it, as far as business startups and things like that, nothing has changed in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Whose responsibility is that? It's not the average Joe Q public. The average John Q public in the black community, it's a percentage of our people that want to go into business. But you need loans and finances. None of these people, including these white folks, they ain't using their own money to go into business. Nobody uses their own money necessarily to go into business. Ask the idiot president. He ain't used it. He never used his own money to go into business.
Got me choking now.
You need to be able to borrow money. These people can get money.
And business, white folks by and large, and I'm in business, white folks by and large can fail two or three times in business and still get money. You fail in business, you ain't getting no more. And they barely give you enough to get by when they give you money.
Right, right.
But if you mess up, and they already, you know, they already got these figures out, most new businesses, 3 to 5 years, it's a chance that you might fail. So with black folks, if you don't get no three strikes like in baseball, one strike, if you swing and miss, generally you out. White folks can shift it around, just change the name of the company. Their name still stays the same, and they can go get other money from other institutions and sometimes from the same institution. Something got to be done. We got to take control of these communities, and I'm talking about the elected officials and the behavior in these communities. If we don't do it, it's not going to get done.
Well, I'm glad. I was glad to hear that they, you know, their emphasis about learning that process, the, you know, the legislative process, how to create bills and what. But I'm also glad to hear the coalition generated out of the question you raised about Freddie Gray, that those silos, because as we become more organized, those of us who are doing that work, we become more organized, then we become, for lack of a better word, the party that pushes the issue of this whole criminal justice reform, or really redefining how the criminal justice process is going to work, to where people are not going to be making that kind of money off of our backs in relationship to just holding us hostages and prisoners, and really not even assisting in developing us to be able to be more effective when we leave the cage.
Yeah, well, I mean, you heard her talking about Baltimore, but she could have been very well talking about Philadelphia.
Exactly.
The same thing. It's the same thing. And speaking of that, before we take a couple of these calls, because we've got about 20 more minutes left in the program, I want to inform the listening audience of Time for an Awakening Media is hosting the community presentation and panel Q&A part two of our forum on 50 years of black political representation in the city of Philadelphia. Now is the time for an African-American grassroots or African-centered political agenda. The presentation will be done by Khalid Rahim of the New African Independence Party. The location is Ateola's Spirit First Foods at 310 South 48th Street in Philadelphia, 19143. That's Saturday, February 2nd, time 1 to 4. It's sponsored by Time for Awakening Media. The admission to the event is free to the public, but food and refreshments are available at the beautiful Ateola's Spirit Folks Fruit Restaurant, the new location. It's larger than Baltimore, the one that was on Baltimore Avenue, Richard.
Yeah.
Nice location. The food is without question some of the best vegan food in the city. So come on out. Be part of the solution to develop African-centered representation in these neighborhoods. More and more we're on the same merry-go-round, Democrat, Republican, and in fact, it ain't Philadelphia is a Democratic city, so it's always been Democrats, black Democrats representing these neighborhoods, and you get what you get. So, and you know what our communities has been getting. You just heard what the sister said about Baltimore. It's no different than Philadelphia.
D.C., DC is really hurting.
Let's grab a couple of these calls coming in. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes. Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Brother Mark.
Yeah, how you doing?
Yes, sir.
I'm doing all right, good brothers. You know, you had a clip there you would play with Malcolm X. And Malcolm would say, you say, we are America's problem. You say, America's problem is you, is black people. See? So they never going to give us nothing. Looking for something from them, as you try to make a move, like you're moving in the positive direction, they pull the plug on you. see. Now you when you learn the rules of the game, they change the rules because they ain't got none for you. You know, 400 years we ain't worked out no honorable relationship yet. It ain't never gonna happen. But look, you know, as well your sister was talking about, you know, initially the system would play the black woman against the black man through the welfare system. The black man, he would not be given the opportunity to exert economic and political control over his community, and he wouldn't be provided a job.
Mm-hmm.
So if the black woman was to get any help, the black man would have to be out of the household. Knowing this time, in order for the woman to get help, they put the child support system on the black man. But black people only control 0.02% of the U.S. economy. Not even a whole number. So if you don't have a job to pay child support, you get locked up, or you lose your driver's license, or you lose your passport. So how, you know, so now that 70% of the black families are headed by single mothers, they have begun attacking our women.
Mm, exactly.
Leaving our children
vulnerable
to the foster care system that continues the cycle of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
The entire system is a prison. So what will we do when the food stamp gets cut off? What will our women do? You know, if this thing continues? I am of a firm belief that there is no solution to black people here. 400 years have demonstrated it. You know, we keep running around in a circle in this country. When it, you know, when it's to be a benefit, they'll ease up a little bit. Because they study us, you know. They know what type of people we are. They know that, okay, you ease up a little bit on them, then the black people going to, and relax again, you know. Again, as I said, ain't no solution for us here. You know, because, again, it's even the political system. They'll pull the vote. Okay, you can't vote no more. What you going to do? And they are fighting, or you're going to have to fight him again to get the right to vote. Man, look, our problem is not trying to get along with these crackers. Our problem is trying to get along with ourselves. And I hear what the sister saying, the sister on the right track, but we need to get a fast track to try to get the hell out of this country. Because this place is a house of cards. It's tumbling. The Titanic is sinking. Even them crackers up there fighting each other. So, and we live off of them crackers. If the system collapses, we collapse with them too. It's time to abandon ship. You take care, my brother. Thank you.
You know, before you leave us, Brother Marcus, let me mention something to you in reference to that. I don't have no problem with what you're saying. In fact, I agree with everything you're saying. But we have to realize that we need, number one, any people needs good leadership. And we need conscious leadership to be able to develop strategies to move our people forward. The things that you're talking about is politics. And I know you realize that. I can't pull up stakes, for example, and go to an African country unless the way is politically made for me to do that, either on that end or on this end. So we need conscious leadership on both shores, and we need to develop it while we're here, because we are here. So, you know, these things to help facilitate anything that our people are doing, we need leadership to do it.
But the fact of the matter is, these people here ain't going to help us to do it.
Well, then that's why. But then that's why we develop people that will help us. We can do it. We can do it.
We have to. Exactly. We have no choice. So what, by any means necessary, as the brother say, by the bullet or the bullet.
Okay.
They be by the bullet door. Because I think the bullet, he understand the bullet more than the ballot. Okay? Anyway, take care, good brother. Thank you.
Take it easy, Brother Marcus.
Take care.
Let's go to 215. 215.
Yeah, hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
All right. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. I praise God. Yeah, Brother Ellen Rich, first, we'll definitely see y'all on February 2nd at Atiola's at 1 o'clock. I'll be there, Lord's willing.
Okay.
Thank you for having Sister Hanson on there. I tell you, she says, sisters, like you said, she just proves once and for all that you got people in our community. They don't get no publicity from the mainstream media or even some of the so-called black media, but the sister on the ground doing the work. She's doing the work that need to be done. Like you have in Philadelphia, you have people like Brother Wesley Bay from Men Against Violence, Brother Bilal Kawan from Father's Day Rally Committee out there doing the work, but you'll never believe it with the white media because they don't, unless you see that, unless they got some ignorant Negroes in the community wrecking havoc, you'll think that's all our community was, just chaotic, but they don't never point out the people that's out there doing the things and stuff in the community. So, you know how they roll. But, when the Sister Hanson was talking about black women, it just made me think about Sandra Bland, Brother Richard, because I was telling Brother Elliot, I was reading in a publication this past week how it's a documentary they're going to do on Sandra Bland. It's coming out, I think, in December, if I remember correct. I think it's in December of this year. And with the approval of the family, they said she hung herself, right? But it was none of her DNA was on the noose. And first of all, you ask yourself, how the hell did she get a noose in the prison anyway? That's the first thing. That should raise flags right there. But anyway, none of her DNA was on this noose that she allegedly hung herself with. So you ask yourself, would she use gloves? I mean, it's just, it's just so crazy, how this stuff going to our people. But the reason I bring this up, Brother Rich and Brother Elliot, when you and Elliot play that clip by Sister Seth McKinney, would say, "Have blacks staring around and be spectators while people being abused and murdered." Now, I wasn't in the prison that day when Sister Sandra Bland met her demise, but I'm almost sure, Brother Elliot, and I don't know if y'all ever thought about this, I'm almost sure. If them devils lynched that sister, which they more than likely did in that prison, you probably have some black law enforcement sitting right in that damn jail watching them white crackers lynch our sister, and they sit there and didn't do a damn thing about it. How much would you be willing to bet that they may not participate in her murder, but they sat right there and watched her being lynched? How far do y'all think about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. You had a black officer that was with a white officer that shot that boy in the backyard of his grandmother's house in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
You had just as many black officers as white officers that drove Freddie Gray around and killed him in the back mm-hmm. of that van. You had a black officer that was with the white officer that shot the man in the back down in Carolina and threw yep. that taser down there. It was a black
That's
officer
correct.
That was with him. So, no, they're not exempt. Well, yeah. They're not exempt from this type of stuff.
That's always obscured, and the media don't focus, and even through the black media. When them thug racist cops beat Rodney King within an inch of his life, it was three or four black officers standing to the side. Now, they didn't participate in the beating of Rodney, but they stood right there and do a damn thing while they was beating the hell out of Rodney. They could have did something, but they stood right there off to the side, So, I'm being rhetorical in my point, Ellen and Richard, but we all on the same page on this, mm-hmm. Like Sister McKinney said, we spectators, we sit around here and watch these white thugs, whether it be white law enforcement or whether we just white thugs, period, abuse our people, and we don't do a damn thing. Like I said, that's why I'm still sticks up my craw what happened to McDonald's down in Florida. Because like I say, if there had been a brother would have grabbed that sister, that Negro would have jumped, he would have rammed his spine from behind that counter and jumped all over that brother, because this was a white boy. He all of a sudden froze. And I've seen that here all the time with these cowardly Negroes. They said, I was in a police station up here in Philadelphia several years ago where black cops stood there and watched these. I was a young boy at the time. I was working for the city at the time, the summer job, and these white cops abused his brother right in prison. The black cops standing right there looking. They didn't beat up the brother, but they were still right. They could have stopped it. They stood right there. I could see one of them was uncomfortable with it, but they didn't have the damn balls to do anything about it. To me, you're just as guilty. If you can't stop it or whatever, then get the hell out of the way. If you just a bunch of a punk and a coward, you got the same gun, the same nightstick that white cop got. If you ain't got enough heart to stand up for what's right, then get the hell off the police department. Don't just have it for a job. Stand up for what's right and stuff, man. Whatever the brothers did while they was in jail, he deserved to be abused. If white boys kill people, do all kind of crazy stuff, they don't abuse them in jail. They let them get a trial and the court fate decide, the court system decide their fate. Let the brothers get, they don't deserve to street just ancestors in jail, let them get tried by the system. But they don't do that to our people. Our people get both. They get tried by the system. If they live to get tried by the system, they get abused before the trial, during the trial, everything, where the white boys can kill up a mass of people, but they bring them in alive. You know, they just had a brother just recently, Ellen Richard, they just, and obviously the brother had mental issues. He had a standoff, I think, up in Chester County, and the police, maybe, I forgot my location might be wrong, but he was wound up getting killed by the police. But yet, a few weeks before, a white boy had up in Chester County had people hostages, but the police waited them out, and they finally ended without anybody being, you know, losing their life. But
and that was on the job also.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, this guy was on a UPS job.
White people involved. It's always a way to bring them in alive, but a brother or sister, they wind up dead. You know what I mean? We see this horror flick over and over and over again. We see it over and over again, the same picture being played out, you know? And I'll say these few more things, Ellen Richard, and I'll get off. When you talk about gentrification, see, a lot of times you watch these talk shows, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, they give you, they foretell what happens in these situations and stuff. For example, on Good Times yesterday, you know, Good Times series was made back in the mid to late 70s when Good Times series ran. Well, in this episode yesterday I was watching, you know, Florida was trying to get a home in one of the worst parts of Chicago, you know, place that the white folks had fled years ago. And again, this is in the 70s now. What happened was they had already got approved with the loan to get the house, everything. Rich white developers came in there, got ordinance from the city council. Now this is a TV show, but it shows you what happens how television, you know, goes into real life. It replicates real life. So these rich white developers or whatever, they got the house tore down, and they want to make way for this big shopping mall or whatever. So not only a shopping mall, but some kind of rich development. That's what it was, because white folks that live in the suburbs, they was ready to come back to the city now. Think about that. See how television, you know, replicates real life, and you see this thing going. This was back in the 70s. If you remember Brother Benny Swines, he said long time Benny Swines was trying to tell our people this from Crisis and Invention. Even back in the 70s, he was telling our people to see these white folks, this is only temporarily. It's out in the suburbs. He said sooner or later, and Benny wouldn't make no secret of it. He said sooner or later, these white folks are getting tired of coming from the suburbs of these cities, whether New York, Philly, Chicago. They want to come back to the inner city and live so they can be closer to their jobs. He said, but the kicker, they don't want to be around you. He said, when they come back, he said, laws going to be enacted to make these houses so unaffordable that you might have been living in your grandmother, your grandfather, your mother for 50, 60, 70 years. They're going to make it so unaffordable, taxes, whatever, that you ain't going to be able to live there. So these white folks can be able to ease back into these and make these inner city so-called ghettos, the terrible ghettos that white folks fled 50, 60 years ago. They're going to make it so out of reach that these white folks can be able to own it. They're going to be able to afford it. And you, as a person that lived there all your life, you're going to be forced out of there. And you see what's going on now,
mm-hmm.
You know, and like I said, Benny Swines, he made no secret of it. You know what I mean? He told our people what was going on. See, and it just goes to show you, Ellen Richard, these black politicians who we don't hold accountable, they are part and partial involved in it. Because like I said, down in Atlanta, you got Dr. King's hometown. You wouldn't know Dr. King's hometown down there now. And people like John Lewis sit right up there and let these white boys come in there and take a history that should be a historical landmark and just take it over down there for these rich white developers and stuff down there. And this playbook is being used all over the country. And you got black politicians, be it John Lewis in Georgia or Dwight Adams or whomever here in Philadelphia and other places, they sitting back letting this stuff happen. You know what I mean? Because they could let them, if they don't directly benefit from it financially, they getting some kind of a perks for being a sellout for some of the community out. So one way or another, they part and partial to the tragedy and the downgrading of our people and stuff, man. But again, the problem is that we just keep on electing these zeros over and over again. Like I said, we like the definition of insanity. We keep putting the same zeros in office and expect a different result. I mean, it's insane, man. It's like you were saying to Richard Elliott, instead of we got the opportunity to elect people in our that's got our interests at heart. We got enough sense to know who is our best interest, who is not. But until we change that mindset and start getting people in, especially like you said, on these local elections like that, and get people in office that going to make sure that money gets flowed to the black community. me, because it's insulting, like you said, down in Baltimore. He got a black man, she getting high on white folks to know damn well they don't give a damn about black people. And it's the same way, Richard and Ellie, right here in Philadelphia. You got tomorrow, you got Dr. King's Day, you got Todd Bernstein, a white Jew, getting paid six, he's executive director of the Dr. King thing here in Philadelphia. This white boy getting paid big money every year. Now, you know it's going to be cold tomorrow, if I forgot the weather report correct, right? Instead of our black children that's going to be out there painting sidewalks, schools, sweeping, whatever, instead of them children getting some kind of stipend or scholarship, something they can build toward their future, they're going to get them a damn sandwich and a T-shirt.
Yeah, Todd Bernstein. Listen, I want to know, I want to know some Jewish icon. What Jewish icon do you know of that have some type of recognition, don't have to be a national holiday, any recognition, and they have some other nationality organizing it? And especially somebody black.
They wouldn't tolerate it, Elliot and Richard. You know they wouldn't play that. So they say, Negro, if you don't get your black, you know what that is, you better. But we're the only people that let that stuff in, Elliot. Again, you just can't blame the white boys or the Jew boys. You got to blame these black politicians that let it happen. These people, that Ty Bernstein didn't put a gun to these people's heads. They let him do it, Elliot and Richard. That's what I'm saying. You got to hold these black elected officials, I don't care whether it's on the city, state, or federal level. They need to be held accountable for this, man. And like I said, the true sufferers is our black children. Dr. King died in Memphis, Tennessee, trying to get predominantly black city, trying to get city workers a nice wage.
Oh, no, Joe, I want to correct that. That ain't, no.
Okay.
He was helping all people. He was helping all people, wasn't he? Those trashmen down there was all races, wasn't it? No, I don't think so. He was no. I'm just being facetious, Joe. He was down there.
But I mean, but really, for real, I mean, for the white ones that was on it was the trash.
He wasn't he wasn't focusing on the white ones. They was the ones making the money.
You're right, Ellie. You're right. You're right. I can see.
No, I was just being facetious. You kind of went off the rails then.
Right, I understand.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Get your point, Brother Elliot. But what I'm saying, Brother Elliot, is that it's insulting when you look at the legacy and what Dr. King died for down there, and to see these Negroes let some white Jew boy come in there and take over his legacy thing and got our black kids, because that's going to be out there. You might have some white kids out there through here and there, but it's going to be predominantly black kids or Latino kids out there in this cold, bitter weather tomorrow, painting sidewalks, playgrounds, schools, you name it, sweeping. And at the end of the day, all they're going to get is a goddamn T-shirt and a sandwich or drink. Come on, man. Get these children something they could build on. Give them a nice stipend. Get them some kind of scholarship they could build for their future, man. And by the way, Ellen Richard, he's going to draw a nice paycheck tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. And listen, nice he's been doing that now for a number of years. Now, what is that? Elected position? Is that an appointed position? Is that an appointed position or what? That guy seemed to be doing it all the time.
I'm not, to be honest with you, Brother Ellie. I don't know. But whether it's appointed or elected, whatever, it's a disgrace and stuff, man, because we're the only people. Because like you said, Jewish people would not allow that. They would not allow no black person or Puerto Rican person or Asian to take over it for one of these Jewish icons or whatever in some kind of legacy celebration every year. They wouldn't tolerate, but we're the only people that allow that, man. We're the only ones that allow that. And that's where it's insulting. It's demoralizing and stuff. Like I said, say, these Negroes, brother, we put in office, they are a disgrace and stuff. And I'll say this last thing, and I'm out of here. When you see what's going on now with the election, with Trump and the government shut down, all this here kind of stuff, again, you see right now, they already trying to, like, and to Elliot's credit, Richard, he called this. They can forget that they're not going to impeach that creep that's in the White House, because already you got Mueller. We can't never trust white folks. This is what I say. So you have had enough conscious black people. Now they could impeach the MF, as the sister said. But you got these white folks like Nancy Pelosi and even Mueller, the so-called investigator. Now he's saying that Trump may have not did these things or whatever. So you can't trust these people, because at the end of the day, Richard and Elliot, they still white people. Even though they might be Democrats, Republicans, they still white people. So you can never really put your trust in these people when it comes to going after Trump. Because early on, and Elliot hit the nail on the head, you didn't see a lot of white Democrats calling for Trump's impeachment and stuff like that. You mainly seen it come from people like Cedric Richmond. You saw it coming from Maxine Waters and a few others. But you didn't hear it coming from a lot of these white Democrats and stuff. So that's why you don't trust them, because at the end of the day, Trump, a white boy, they white. whether they be white men or white women, whether they be white Democrats, Republicans, male or female, it doesn't matter. They're still Caucasian people, and they tend to have that circle of wagon mentality. Cause they're still Caucasian people at the end of the day. You know what I mean? So I don't trust them and stuff when it comes to impeaching Trump. I don't trust them. I trust them as far as I could throw them, and I'm serious about that. I trust these white folks as far as I could throw them when it comes to dealing with 45, Richard. I really do. You know? So, I thank you for the time, brothers, and I'll get off so somebody else get on. But thank you for the time.
All right, now.
Peace.
Richard, we're running a little bit over. We got time for one more?
One more. Okay.
Okay, let's go to 646. 646?
See, your boy, Lil Joe, was on fire tonight, man. What happened to him, man? One of them Democratic black members upset him, I see. Y'all better help him out, silly man. Don't let the man get a heart attack because of the politician. How are y'all good brothers doing?
Everything's all right.
Bridget, yep. Draymond Jones is two today.
Two.
Well, tomorrow you're going to need three, brother. They say it's going to be as cold as a witch's stick, as they say. It's going to be amazing, Richard, tomorrow. Are you going to the daddy, or the daddy gave you Martin Luther King Day off?
Hey, it's up in the air.
Oh, you supposed to go in tomorrow?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. It keep you out the cold, man. And nothing like staying out the cold unless Mama tell you you got to go to the store and get something so she can finish that meal, Lamar. You know what I mean? Then you only may have to use two pairs of long johns because you'll be back right quick. You know, but listen, right quick. This whole thing with this government shutdown, man, I'm a little surprised that it's going on as long as it is. I was under the impression, honestly, that it would probably have ended like a week ago. But it seems like these devils are really dug in to the point to where as a lot of people are going to suffer, it seems. And, you know, the funny thing about it is financial institutions are the ones who are going to benefit from this. That's the crazy thing out of all of it. The payday loans and all the others are going to be the ones that are going to, you know, make money off of this strategy.
Yeah, you're
so
right.
When it's all said and done, everyday people who they're saying that they're going to get their money back, there's no guarantee that they're going to get their money back. You know, I don't know if there's any real truth that all of the workers are going to be reimbursed for their time out of work. Is there any factual proof that this is what's going on? Your boy, Chucky Chuck Schumer, I heard him out there saying that they were going to try and pass some laws, but always remember, your boy, 45, has to be the one to sign it. So that's gonna be interesting right there on how that's gonna play out.
Yeah, because I heard them saying that they wanted to try to pass something where the guys can be get retroactive money when the shutdown ends, but that's not, you know, they didn't say that that's a definite. And they were only talking about federal workers. They weren't talking about everybody else that's affected.
Yeah. Because the ones that are really suffering that they're talking slightly about are the contractors. Contractors are not government employees or anything like that. They're regular employees. So the bottom line boils down to is that they're going to be in a situation to where, as you know, what's going to be guaranteed for their survival?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just a real crazy situation because in the reality, man, that wall ain't about nothing. That wall ain't going to stop no illegals or drugs coming into this country. You know what I mean? People coming into this country every day, drugs coming into this country every day. You know what I mean? This is just another form of suffrage or a way to control the people. And then again, the narrative is, you know, real, real crazy. Now, let me leave you with this. This is going to be a shocker for you right quick. You saw this whole thing with these kids that was, you know, doing whatever they was going to the Indian guy, and they make it into a whole big media thing? Well, I was reading some stuff online that they ain't even talking about. The crazy black Hebrew Israelites were tormenting those kids before that whole came into play. There's a video showing how the Israelites was out there doing their thing. Now, you and I both know, when they do their thing, they do their thing, even though it's comical. But, man, that's the one group, if you want to see them get on some Yerugals and just have a good laugh, those are the ones. And from what I understand, they were putting on one of their stellar performances, and, you know, they're not showing that. But there's a video on YouTube showing the incident from the beginning to the end, and it seems like, you know, that the media is not trying to, you know, give some sort of creed or call out the black Israelites. Because if you notice, in all honesty, nobody really calls them fools out. You know, and I know
that's a little strange. And that's a little strange too, Jay.
Yeah.
But that's another subject in itself, but that's a little strange.
But yeah, think about it. Because listen, man, I go back 20, 30 years listening to them clowns on 42nd Street Times. And I mean, it's comical, man. I mean, it's not like seeing one of them button Jeff poles come down the bar or something like that. Oh, they get it on the topic. And then if you had the nerve to open your mouth and say something to it, it's even more classic material they have in store for you. Now they got them every Saturday on 125th Street in Harlem. You know, then they up in the Bronx. They always someplace, you know, talking that talk. But here it is. Have you ever really seen any type of investigation in regards to them? And they way worse as far as rhetoric and things of that nature in the Nation of Islam. I've never seen the Nation of Islam behave in that type of fashion towards white folks. But these guys get in the middle of wherever they decide they want to go and do their thing. But the reality is, why haven't they been investigated? Why haven't they been exposed for a true hate group? I don't think they on the ADL's list like the Nation of Islam is.
No, I think
speak about that.
No, I think they are. In fact, I know they are.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, okay. But it's okay. Kind of strange why they're allowed to do what they do in a lot of these major cities. And a lot of these cities, they go right into the center city areas and do that. So it makes you say, what's
the... Hey, listen, Elliot, I got to give them credit for their rhetoric. It's classic material. You know what I mean? They use the Sky Daddy book and everything, man. You know, it's like if you want to see a show, they will give you a show. But the point of the matter is, the media plays a lot of games, and they're really subjective on how they tell a story. And now it seems like one of the mothers in regards to what happened, they want to bring black Muslims into it. So, you know, that's another dog whistle thing. But look, I just want to say, let's keep our ears and eyes open to what is going on. Congratulations on your new program coming up in regards to trying to find some black leaders that will do something. You know, tomorrow is going to be a dog and pony show. I know Palm Daddy here has, you know, a lot of people coming to his place.
So you going over to the House of Justice?
Are you I'll be right in my house drinking hot chocolate and Hennessy to try and stay warm. Yeah. What's wrong with you? But I'm just saying, every basic politician of note will be there to really kiss the ring. But have you also noticed since 45 has been in office that you really haven't only seen him or heard from him through his television and radio program? You know?
I haven't really noticed.
We didn't even really talk about the women's march. I mean, your guest that was on the debate was excellent. I wanted to try and call in and ask her, what is the reason why most of these young ladies are going to jail? I would really like to know that.
Yeah, well, she tests on it, but we'll talk about it again.
Yeah, she'll be back. But listen, Richard, Brother Elliot, please stay warm. I know it's going to be hard for you, Richard, but listen.
It ain't going to be hard for me to stay warm.
Okay, but listen, get you some tea and brandy. You know what I mean? If you really want to get spicy, get you a candy cane and put it in it, brother. And you know, that'll really give it a nice twist. And Brother Elliot, I know hopefully you won't be working tomorrow. And listen, enjoy the rest of the evening, you great Africans. Be good.
All right. Peace, Jay. Richard, come up to the end of another program. I want to get that lineup Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Brother Ushi, African Perspectives, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Always interesting dialogue and subjects on African Perspectives with Brother Ushi. I think tomorrow afternoon, too, Sister POC wants to do a special program from 4 to 6 on Time for Awakening, and then from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed on Time for an Awakening. And from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365 Connect with Sister Nataki and Brother Talib. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Sister POC has a regularly scheduled show, Revive, from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Thursday, from 7 to 8, Relationships with Joy and Troy on Time for Awakening, from 7 to 8 on Thursday. And then Friday, Time for Awakening is back from 8 to 10. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always. I will be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
Driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. To play such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. Problem.
children.